It's time for New Hampshire Today, Weekend Edition. News, politics, and local happenings. Putting the week in perspective.
Because after all.
And looking ahead.
The city never sleeps at night. It's time to begin, isn't it?
New Hampshire Today, Weekend Edition. On News Radio 610 and 96.7.
I'm just the same as I was. Now don't you
your host for New Hampshire Today, Weekend Edition, Jeff Chittister.
And this week on New Hampshire Today, the Weekend Edition, we're going to talk about government shutdown, we're going to talk about impeachment, and we're going to talk about the Electoral College, all this week on New Hampshire Today, the Weekend Edition with Jeff Chittister. Welcome back to New Hampshire Today, the Weekend Edition. Jeff Chittister with you, as always. Thanks for taking time out of your day to join us. Don't forget, you can join me every Monday from 6:20 to 6:30 as I hop into the weekday show with Jack Heath. We talk about things that happen over the weekend, things that are coming up. We're getting to that time where really it is time for us to talk about the next presidential election. So once again, that'll take up the news cycle. But we'll talk about a lot of other things as well. Then you can also join me on Fridays. Most Fridays, I am in studio with Jack from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. You can always join us on Facebook. Go ahead and send me emails at nhperspective@gmail.com of things that you would like to talk to me about. And we'll do that as well. So certainly, once again, don't forget Mondays, 6:20, 6:30. And then Fridays from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. Bring the Stonehouse Bakery donuts in as well. Hey, busy, busy week. Happy 2019. New year. New me. Not really new me. I'm the same guy as I've always been for 10 years. What we're going to do today is we're going to talk about some of the things that happened over this past week. Of course, we're still in a government shutdown. I pre-recorded the show, so I'm just going to go out on a limb and say, yep, we're still in the shutdown. So no risk at being wrong there. But the other thing is that, of course, we also have a new Congress in place, and not necessarily a new Congress. We have a new House in place. So the House is now in control of the Democrats. The Senate is still in control, is still controlled by the Republicans, and the White House is still controlled by the Republicans as well. And we already started to see some movement this week on things that are going to happen. And what I want to start off with during this segment is I want to talk about the reason why the shutdown is here. Why are we here with the shutdown? We're here with the shutdown because President Trump has made it a point of basically saying that he is staying hard until he gets $5 billion for the funding for security for our southern border. That includes a wall, includes a lot of other things too. Now, the first thing I want to say is that he's been kind of fluid on this. It's not helping the situation. He has said wall over and over again, and he has at times moved away from that $5 billion. He needs to firm that up. He needs to be sure, because the problem is it's not just Democrats, but Republicans don't really trust that they're going to create a deal and then suddenly he's going to walk away from it. They believe that he is capable of doing that, and he has shown that in the past. So for those of you who are saying, oh, the president is standing firm, he is somewhat standing firm, but he needs to be much more concise so that we understand exactly what we are all aiming for. Now, on the other side, of course, the Democrats are standing firm too, and we're going to play some audio clips here in a minute. And the first thing I want to address, and this is a frustration, you know, I write for the local paper, and one of the columnists talked about fourth century technology. The wall is fourth century technology. Look, nobody's talking about fourth century technology. For one thing, there's a lot of things that we have to look at. But the Democrats have now taken their mantra. So I always know when people write and when people talk on air and they use that term fourth century technology, that they've got their talking points from the Democrats. So let's take a few things. I always think it's a silly argument. It's just a silly argument because none of us are talking about a modern security apparatus, whatever that may end up looking like on the southern border. And are just saying, yeah, we're just going to do fourth century technology. So let's look at some other fourth century technology. The fishing reel was invented in the fourth century. We're still using that? Yeah, we've improved on it, but we're still using it. Oil wells were first originated in the fourth century. Are we still using oil wells? Yes, we are. Did we make them better? Yes, we did. How about the paddle wheel boats? Don't use those as much, but the technology and the gear system is something that we still use. Is it the same one that we used in the fourth century? No. Did we improve upon it? Yes, we did. But it had to start somewhere. Let's go back even further. If we look at, you know, even before the fourth century BC, we created gears, hydraulics, canal locks, paper, iron, the wheel, scissors, alcohol, We could use a lot more of that today. We're still using that? Yeah. Did we improve upon it? Yes, we did. How about the 3rd century, before the 4th century? We did the first printing technology. Still using printing technology? Yeah. Did we improve upon it? Yes, we did. How about crank mechanisms? Do we still use crank mechanisms? Yes, we do. Did we improve upon them? Yes, we did. How about turbines? Do we still use turbines? This electricity ain't happened without turbines. Did we improve upon it? Yes, we did. How about even going back further before Christ was born? How about steam turbines? Did you know that was invented before Christ was born? Still using it. Doors. Do we still use doors? Yes, we do. Wheelbarrows. Do you still use a wheelbarrow? I sure in the hell still do. Pendulum technology. Do we still use that? Yes, we do. How about arch bridges? How about trip hammers? That goes back to the 1st century before Christ. So that argument of, you were going to use 4th century technology, no, we're not. We're going to use things that work with a modern bent. So when I hear Democrats say, well, you know, we're talking 4th century technology. Yeah, that's what we're talking about, 4th century technology. Yet all those things I just listed to you were created 4th century or before, and we're still using them. Ridiculous arguments. You know, it's the childish way that some choose to argue that makes this debate even harder. So what we're going to do is I'm going to play some clips first. First, I'm going to play for you where Nancy Pelosi is on this. So I'm going to play a couple clips from Nancy Pelosi. We're going to come out of it and talk a little bit about it. So here you go.
A wall is an immorality. It's not who we are as a nation. And this is not a wall between Mexico and the United States that the president is creating here. It's a wall between reality.
Are you willing to come up and give him some of this money for the wall? Because apparently that's the sticking point.
No, nothing for the wall. We're talking about border security.
Nothing for the wall, but that means it's
Well, we can go through this all back and forth. Mm-hmm. No. How many more times can we say no? Nothing for the wall.
So that was two clips from Nancy Pelosi. The first clip was from the press conference immediately after she took over as Speaker of the House again for the House side of Congress. The second interview was an interview done on the Today Show. Now, the key thing is this. This is nothing new, folks. She has been calling the wall immoral for years. The wall is immoral. Now, other than calling it 4th century technology, to call it immoral is absolutely ludicrous. It's just incredible. Now, I understand the government is shut down, and this is a pain in a lot of different ways. Government shutdowns are an indication of failure to govern. This is why I have said over and over again we need to pull power away from the central government and bring it back to the states. We can do this, folks. It's functionally good. When we have a budget crisis here in New Hampshire, when we have a budget crisis in some other functional states, do we close things down? Are our state parks closed to you? Do we see litter piling up all over the place? No. Because we know how to function. Our central government has become so big, so bloated, it doesn't know how to function. It doesn't. It really doesn't. And 1 second closed is absolute chaos everywhere. And that is not a system that's sustainable for us. But that thing I find amazing about this wall, one, stop saying it's 4th century technology. Two, it's immoral. And three, both sides are dug in. If anyone doubts for a moment that President Trump is going to stay where he is, they are grossly, grossly misunderstanding him. He is not going to back down. You need to understand that. And you can say, well, all the blame is going to be on you. Guarantee you, in 2 weeks, the blame is going to be on the Democrats. And that's just the simple fact. But, I mean, when you look at the wall, and the simple truth is nobody knows really how to talk about this. And Republicans have to get better at how they talk about this. Here are the facts. Illegal aliens are twice as likely to commit crimes in Arizona than a natural born citizen. That's a fact. 90% of all heroin and fentanyl come across our southern border. That's a fact. Over 10,000 kids are illegally sex trafficked across our border every single year. That's a fact. 56,000 illegal immigrants are in our federal prison system right now, and countless others are in our state penitentiary system. At least $135 billion a year is the financial burden on U.S. taxpayer for every single year that illegal immigrants drain from our system. That's a fact. It's not fair that people from African nations, Bolivia, Uruguay, Bangladesh, Belarus, you pick the nation in which they have to travel halfway across the world to get here, that had to wait in line, they had to fill out applications, they didn't commit a crime, they wait for years to come to this country and maybe become American citizens. It's not fair to them. And that's why the wall is important. How about sovereignty? Why do borders matter? They're so dismissive as to why borders matter. Borders are physical representations of where good ideas begin and bad ideas start. All you have to do, and I remember this, West Germany and East Germany. I was a U.S. soldier during the Cold War, and we could look across that wall and see the bad ideas. Remember that that wall was built not by the West to keep people from going over there. It was built by the East to stop people coming to freedom. We're not suggesting that we build a wall to keep Americans in. We're suggesting we build a wall to make sure that we don't have sex trafficking, to make sure we don't have illegal drugs coming across, and frankly, to make sure that we maintain our sovereignty. Other borders, what about North and South Korea? Once again, where good ideas start and bad ideas start. Look at South Korea. Look at North Korea. This concept of open borders. If you don't believe in physical delineation of where good ideas start and where bad ideas exist, there's part of your problem. Look, we're not Mexico. We're not Honduras. We're not Guatemala. We have a very unique culture. It's not, and an identity too. And it's not a white, it's not a black culture. It's an American culture. Our culture is much different. And we have outpaced the rest of the world, including those neighbors to our south, over the past 50 to 150 years. Look, nations have unique cultures. And really, we should be looking at those elements and appreciating and understanding each of those unique cultures. But open borders and this concept of transferable citizenship cheapens the ideals and principles of our nation. And it's an insult to those people who waited in line for those millions of immigrants that had to travel halfway around the world to come to our country. That's what we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen. And frankly, the Republicans and the media really don't want to have these conversations. The Democrats are clueless in this. But that's really what we're talking about here. Now, are we just talking about fourth century technology? No, we're not. And it's so juvenile. So juvenile when I hear Democrats go to that and the media just stick the microphone in front of their face and go, ooh, that was very witty. Not witty at all. It's an argument easily disputed when you have somebody who understands what the real problem is. And that's the issue. And that's the issue at hand right now. Our government is shut down over this issue. This was a promise that President Trump made. He promised that Mexico would pay for it. I don't know how the hell that's going to happen. But to believe that Trump is the only one entrenched in a concept that maybe some people don't appreciate, they're ignoring the other side completely. They're not paying attention to the other side. Now, a lot of people also go back and say, well, you know, what would Ronald Reagan do? In fact, Nancy Pelosi invoked Ronald Reagan in her speech. I'm going to play that clip, and then I'm going to come back and talk a little bit about that.
And when we're talking about the Dreamers, let us remember what President Reagan said in his last speech as President of the United States. I urge you all to read it. It's a beautiful speech. He said, if we ever close the door to new Americans, our leadership role in the world will soon be lost. Ronald Reagan. Our common cause. You want to applaud for Ronald Reagan?
So that was Nancy Pelosi on the floor when she took the gavel and retained the responsibility of being Speaker of the House. Now, I always find it amazing when Democrats, I mean, really, Democrats quoting Reagan are like atheists who quote Jesus. You don't believe in the messenger. Why promote the message? So once again, yep, Reagan did say that. The shiny city on the hill, one of the great farewell addresses by a president, right up there with George Washington's farewell address. Highly recommend you read both of them. But let's look at the context and the entirety of the history of understanding of how really Reagan approached immigration. Look, he was like many people. And when he worked with Ted Kennedy in the 84 to create a package that at that point kept a little bit less than a million illegal immigrants in this country, and yes, amnesty was used, It was one of those mistakes he did talk about regretting. When he talked about that, and when Nancy Pelosi quotes that, he's not talking about undisciplined immigration. He is talking about a disciplined immigration policy to include legally coming to this country. And he did speak about his regret of working with the Democrats in 84 for that amnesty package because what he had been promised never came to fruition. The amnesty happened, but none of the funding, none of the border security, none of that happened. You can go back all the way to the 1980 debate between Bush and Reagan when, once again, they felt humanity for those people who come to this country illegally and tried to make a difference in this country. But the simple fact of the matter is that they both said the problem has existed well before the 1980 campaign and exists still today. We've become a much more enlightened culture to exactly what's happening. We never solved the problem in the past for one reason and one reason only, because we excuse the misbehavior of others. It doesn't work anywhere else in our society, folks. When you excuse misbehavior and walk past misbehavior, how are you surprised that the misbehavior continues? And let's not forget that many of these people coming into this country illegally, and most of it from the southern border, 40% right now overstayed their visa. We're talking about an entire overhaul of our system. Not the 10-point plan of how you become a resident or a U.S. citizen. That works. What isn't working is how we, one, monitor people who come here on visa, and two, how we prevent people from coming in here illegally. That's what we need for comprehensive immigration reform. We need to fix those things that have existed since 1980 and, frankly, from before. So when Nancy Pelosi sits there before the American people and then mocks the Republicans for not standing up applauding, look, whenever a Republican up there is up there giving a speech and says things that are motivating to that side of the House, the Democrats don't stand up either. Like, this hypocrisy is so interesting to me. Like, they believe that the American people don't see it. But for Nancy Pelosi to quote Ronald Reagan and then completely misrepresent the entirety of what he thought about immigration is ludicrous. And then for them to be childish and go back to, oh, it's fourth century technology, and for her to say not $1, not one dime, and she's talking about border security. Look, bring the package forward then. I would love to see the Democrats write out a 10 to 20 point border security plan, because they don't really have that right now, folks. But not just say we're going to do more border security, but actually outline 10 to 20 points of exactly what they think border security is on the southern border and present that. And then let's see if they understand the magnitude of the problem. President Trump is entrenched. The Democrats are entrenched. And this is where we are. If they think for a moment that Trump is going to back away from this, they've made a huge mistake. I will also warn Republicans about this. This is going to hurt. It's going to hurt the Democrats, too. This is really going to hurt. Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and Donald Trump are probably the worst people we could have in this position, because none of them are going to compromise. Ronald Reagan also used to say, and Nancy Pelosi should quote this more often, Ronald Reagan used to say all the time, isn't it amazing what you can accomplish when no one cares who gets credit? That's a great quote. That's an awesome quote. They have to figure this out. At one point during her speech, when she took the gavel and became Speaker of the House again, trust me, the Democrats are going to regret that. She brought up all the kids that were there with their parents who had just been sworn in. She should have left them there because, frankly, they were the most mature ones in that room. And this is where we are. We are at an impasse. Everybody's entrenched. I happen to agree with President Trump. It's one of the few times that I have. This is an important process. As I laid out all the facts, as I laid out why we should be supporting sovereignty, as I laid out why borders matter. Frankly, I should run for Congress, because there only seem to be a few of us who understand this. So next week, hopefully, maybe, I'll be talking about a resolution. I can assure you that resolution, maybe called something different, is going to be a plan. Trump has to be more definitive is exactly what he means. The Democrats should, if they really believe it being adults in the room, present a 10 or 20 point plan, an exact plan of what they mean by border security. And this issue will be resolved. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a break. When we come back, I get some more quotes from you this week. It's been a very lovely week. We are now in divided power in the central government, and we'll talk a little bit about that as well. So we'll go ahead and take a break, and we'll be right back on New Hampshire Today, the weekend edition. Welcome back to New Hampshire Today, the weekend edition. Jeff Chittister with you. As always, thanks. Hey, no football today. We got to wait till next week because, hey, it's playoff time. Let's see how far that the Patriots can get. I find it amazing, too, that the Eagles made it in, too. They were having just a brutal season, but they limped in, and they limped in well. So it could be interesting to see how this all plays out. But no football today, so you just have to pay attention to me as well. Hey, good victory the other night by the Wildcats hockey team. Men's hockey team in overtime, really good, fourth in a row. So I was glad to see that as well. Hey, some of the other things, too, is don't forget to catch my weekly article. Of course, you can check it out online at Seacoast Online. If you like to feel the paper between your fingers, you can pick up Foster's or you can pick up the Portsmouth Herald. This week, I talk about basically what our responsibility as op-ed writers are. One of our responsibilities isn't to attack our fellow op-ed writers. It's not really what we should be doing. This is about ideas and principles, not about people. Sometimes I bring up people. But how you address that is something important. So read the article this week. Hey, so let's get back to some of the other news. So the new Congress is in place. The Senate remains in control of the Republicans. And Congress, the House, is now in control of the Democrats. And so a lot of interesting things happened already. So new legislation came through. So I'm going to talk about a few things just as kind of a frame. And we'll talk about it more over the next few months. The first thing is that if anyone doubted, for those, and I'm not talking to the Democrats, I'm not talking to Republicans, I'm talking to independents. You wanted to put a check and balance. You were kind of distressed as to how Trump was acting. And so you wanted to put a check and balance. But you expected most of them to go to Congress and legislate. Democrats, you wanted something different. Republicans, you wanted something different. Independents, you wanted some adults. You didn't get that. You didn't. All right? They talked about impeachment before they got in. And everyone said, no, we're not going to have that on the table. It happened. First bill was introduced for impeachment, and people started talking about impeachment. If the Democrats drive down too deep in this, remember the Democrats were the ones who were saying, well, we should wait for the Mueller report. They're not waiting for anything. They're just as bad about respecting the authority of Mueller's investigation as Trump is sometimes. We didn't get adults, people. We weren't going to get adults. We got some adults, but we weren't going to get it. Nice to see we got more veterans, though. That's a good thing. So I'm going to play some audio first. This first audio is newly elected freshman representative Rashida Tlaib. She's a Democrat from Minnesota, and she said this in front of a crowd at a MoveOn.org. You know, that's a nice centrist organization, MoveOn.org. And we'll go ahead and follow that up with President Trump's response. So listen to these clips.
We're going to go in there. We're going to impeach the motherfucker.
If you wouldn't mind, if you could comment on the remarks made by a freshman congressperson about impeachment involving a bit of a profanity last night.
Well, you can't impeach somebody that's doing a great job. That's the way I view it. I've probably done more in the first 2 years than any president, any administration in the history of our country. You look at tax cuts, you look at regulations, you look at what we've done for the vets, you look at the rebuilding of the military and the numbers that we're talking about, and many other things. I can give you a list. It's pages long. So I think it's very hard to impeach somebody who's done a great job. That's number one. And we even talked about that today. I said, why don't you use this for impeachment? And Nancy said, we're not looking to impeach you. I said, that's good, Nancy. That's good. But you know what? You don't impeach people when they're doing a good job. And you don't impeach people when there was no collusion, because there was no collusion. You know Russians better than I do, Kevin, okay? There was no collusion. I didn't need Russians to help me win Iowa. I didn't need Russians to help me win the great state of Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania. I won them because I went there and I campaigned hard. And my opponent didn't go there enough. And she lost a lot of good states, a lot of states that for many, many years, for decades, have gone Democrat. They went Republican. That's why I won. Not because of Russia.
Your comment about the freshman congressperson's comments specifically about...
Well, I thought her comments were disgraceful. This is a person that I don't know. I assume she's new. I think she dishonored herself, and I think she dishonored her family. Using language like that in front of her son and whoever else was there, I thought that was a great dishonor to her and to her family. I thought it was highly disrespectful to the United States of America. Yes.
So that was the first clip was actually from the MoveOn.org event in which Congresswoman Tlaib, Democrat of Minnesota, basically made that statement. So, look, their mind is there. We've already had someone file a bill for that. How far it'll get, I don't know. I think it happens every time. It doesn't matter who the president is. I think it happened under President Obama as well. I have to go back and look at my history. But once again, this is what you elected. You elected a bunch of children. Like I said, Nancy Pelosi, when she called all those children up on the stage with her, should have handed the gavel to one of the kids and walked off because they would have been more adult than this were. There were kids present at this MoveOn.org event. And look, I know so if you're a Democrat, you applauded that. You like that. If you're a Republican, you're disgusted. Look, we've had our moments on the Republican side that talk about that as well. And then President Trump. Now, President Trump was right. I mean, when we consider if you can't impeach a president who lied under oath, who was found to be who perjured himself under oath, if you can't get rid of a president for that, short of murder, I don't know how you're going to get rid of a president. If you can't get rid of a president who stood before the American people and said, I want you to listen to me. You should have just said you want to read my lips and lied to the American public. You're not going to get that. Remember, Clinton was also charged with trying to change the testimony of people, was trying to prevent the prosecution from going forward. Some of the same charges, in fact, I think almost the same charges that people are suggesting against Trump right now, Clinton got as well. And they were true. They were factual. So that's what we ended up with impeachment. Now, look, for the president to say it was a disgrace against the presidency and family and everything like that, look, he's had his moments too. Once again, hypocrisy is really the sport of Washington, D.C. He's talked tough. He's used obscenities. He's not a saint. And Republicans like that. Democrats liked what Congresswoman Tlaib did. But what about the independents? Is that what you elected? Is that what you wanted? Doubt it. Tapping my finger over here. Sorry about that. So that's how we start the new Congress. That was on the very night after she was sworn in. The very night after she was sworn in. So what about other congresswomen? Of course, there's a great congresswoman from New York, and I find this congresswoman intriguing in many ways. Congresswoman Cortez also had her moment, too. And look, it's not just those people on the right who are putting the spotlight on her. Look, the people on the left want her to be a rising star, too. She's 28 years old. She's attractive. So they're doing just as much to make her the new generation, which I think is a huge mistake. She's not that good. So let's play parts of an interview with her that is going to air in 60 Minutes this Sunday.
You're talking about zero carbon emissions, no use of fossil fuels within 12 years?
That is the goal. It's ambitious. And
how is that possible? You're talking about everybody having to drive an electric car?
It's going to require a lot of rapid change that we don't even conceive as possible right now. What is the problem with trying to push our technological capacities to the furthest extent possible?
This would require, though, raising taxes.
There's an element where, yeah, people are going to have to start paying their fair share in taxes.
Do you have a specific on the tax rate?
you know, you look at our tax rates back in the 60s, and when you have a progressive tax rate system, your tax rate, you know, let's say from zero to $75,000 may be 10% or 15%, et cetera. But once you get to, like, the tippy tops, on your 10 millionth dollar, sometimes you see tax rates as high as 60 or 70%. That doesn't mean all $10 million are taxed at an extremely high rate, but it means that as you climb up this ladder, you should be contributing more.
What you are talking about, just big picture, is a radical agenda compared to the way politics is done right now.
Well, I think that it only has ever been radicals that have changed this country. Abraham Lincoln made the radical decision to sign the Emancipation Proclamation. Franklin Delano Roosevelt made the radical decision to embark on establishing programs like Social Security. That is radical.
Do you call yourself a radical?
Yeah, you know, if that's what radical means, call me a radical.
And that was Representative Cortez. It'll appear this tonight, as a matter of fact, on 60 Minutes with Anderson Cooper. So this is what happens when you elect a 28-year-old bartender who's never really worked at anything in her life, who's a narcissist, who studied international affairs and economics from Boston University. Congratulations, Boston University. You did a crappy job there. Tippity tops. I love how that, you know, great language. Rapid change. Does she not understand that the rapid change in the last 30 years in technology, the last 30 years, has outpaced the thousands of years before that? We are rapidly changing it. Government didn't really help there. It was innovations by people and by individuals. And oftentimes, government got in the way. 28-year-old former bartender, this is what you elected. She is such a narcissist. To put her in herself in the same realm as Lincoln and FDR, many of FDR's programs are failing all over the place. Lincoln was a leader. Pick your spot and stand firm. 70%. And she goes back to the 60s. Let's understand something about certainly the tax structure out of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Because people like to go back to Eisenhower. We didn't have any computers back then. So people could hide money like that. They hid money all the time. And to believe that that tax rate was capable of really existing the way they believe it is, it's such a fantasy. They're so clueless as to exactly what happened with that tax structure. No person of any real wealth paid 90% of the taxes. Between loopholes and not having technologies to oversee it. And do you know what you would do to this economy if you created, quote, a progressive tax plan? It's time for you to pay your fair share. Once again, the 5% richest people in this country pay well over 50% of all the taxes. And this is what you elected, people. Tlaib, right out of the bat, MFing and calling for impeachment. And then this clueless person who has a degree in economics suggesting that, one, we haven't tried to push ourselves in technology fast enough, and suggesting a 70% tax bracket. Brilliant. Brilliant. And it won't happen, folks. She won't get anything. She'll spend 40 years as a congresswoman, and if she gets 5 bills passed, I'll be shocked. Take a break, and we'll be right back in New Hampshire Today, the weekend edition. And welcome back to New Hampshire Today, the weekend edition. Jeff Chittister with you. Hey, real quick segment here. We're going to talk about one other thing that happened this past week. Congressperson Stephen Cohen, Democrat of Tennessee, introduced a bill to get rid of the Electoral College. There have been moves about from National Popular Vote Organization, that's what it's called, National Popular Vote, to try to get rid of the Electoral College. And this would be a huge mistake. And when we talk about the Electoral College, it was a brilliant concept, and you really need to do your homework to understand why I'm saying that. We are not a pure democracy by design. And the day we become a pure democracy, folks, will mark the end of this country if you don't understand the brilliance of the Electoral College. And for those of you who keep saying that the Electoral College is a representation of slavery, it's nothing. The debate was completely separate. The design was completely separate. And those who say that lack an understanding of what the true brilliance of the Electoral College was. So I'm going to play an audio clip for you from a person we've had on before, Tara Ross, who is the leading expert on the Electoral College. We're going to let her tell you what the Electoral College is, and then we're going to close out the rest of the show. So here you go.
I want to talk to you about the Electoral College and why it matters. All right, I know this doesn't sound like the most sensational topic of the day, but stay with me because I promise you it's one of the most important. To explain why requires a very brief civics review. The President and Vice President of the United States are not chosen by a nationwide popular vote of the American people. Rather, they are chosen by 538 electors. This process is spelled out in the United States Constitution. Why didn't the founders just make it easy and let the presidential candidate with the most votes claim victory? Why did they create, and why do we continue to need, this Electoral College? The answer is critical to understanding not only the Electoral College, but also America. The founders had no intention of creating a pure majority-rule democracy. They knew from careful study of history what most have forgotten today or never learned. Pure democracies do not work. They implode. Democracy has been colorfully described as two wolves and a lamb voting on what's for dinner. In a pure democracy, bare majorities can easily tyrannize the rest of a country. The founders wanted to avoid this at all costs. This is why we have three branches of government: executive, legislative, and judicial. It's why each state has two senators, no matter what its population, but also different numbers of representatives based entirely on population. It's why it takes a supermajority in Congress and three-quarters of the states to change the Constitution. And it's why we have the Electoral College. Here's how the Electoral College works. The presidential election happens in two phases. The first phase is purely democratic. We hold 51 popular elections every presidential election year, one in each state and one in D.C. On election day in 2012, you may have thought you were voting for Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, but you were really voting for a slate of presidential electors. In Rhode Island, for example, if you voted for Barack Obama, you voted for the state's four Democratic electors. If you voted for Mitt Romney, you were really voting for the state's four Republican electors. Part two of the election is held in December, and it is this December election among the state's 538 electors, not the November election, which officially determines the identity of the next president. At least 270 votes are needed to win. Why is this so important? Because the system encourages coalition building and national campaigning. In order to win, a candidate must have the support of many different types of voters from various parts of the country. Winning only the South or the Midwest is not good enough. You cannot win 270 electoral votes if only one part of the country is supporting you. But if winning were only about getting the most votes, a candidate might concentrate all of his efforts in the biggest cities or the biggest states. Why would that candidate care about what people in West Virginia or Iowa or Montana think? But, you might ask, isn't the election really only about the so-called swing states? Actually, no. If nothing else, safe and swing states are constantly changing. California voted safely Republican as recently as 1988. Texas used to vote Democrat. Neither New Hampshire nor Virginia used to be swing states. Most people think that George W. Bush won the 2000 election because of Florida. Well, sort of, but he really won the election because he managed to flip one state which the Democrats thought was safe, West Virginia. Its four electoral votes turned out to be decisive. No political party can ignore any state for too long without suffering the consequences. Every state, and therefore every voter in every state, is important. The Electoral College also makes it harder to steal elections. Votes must be stolen in the right state in order to change the outcome of the Electoral College. With so many swing states, this is hard to predict and hard to do. But without the Electoral College, any vote stolen in any precinct in the country could affect the national outcome, even if that vote was easily stolen in the bluest California precinct or the reddest Texas one. The Electoral College is an ingenious method of selecting a president for a great, diverse republic such as our own. It protects against the tyranny of the majority, encourages coalition building, and discourages voter fraud. Our founders were proud of it, we can be too. I'm Tara Russ for Prager University.
Join Prager University. Here to sign up for free at PragerU.com for quizzes, contests, and prizes.
So that was Tara Russ, and one of the leading authorities on the Electoral College and a lot of things, other things that historically come from our Constitution. Also, Dennis Prager. Love Dennis Prager. And, of course, Prager University is a great place for you to go to and find out information. So I appreciate it when they do that kind of content. So once again, this is how we started our first week with a new House, basically calling for impeachment, dropping impeachment charters inside of the actual Congress, and then suggesting a 70% tax on those who are successful to pay their fair share, and then coming out with attacking one of the most brilliant elements of our Constitution, the thing that makes us truly a constitutional republic and has allowed this country to really survive where other countries have failed. And this is what we have with this new Congress. Checks and balances are important, folks. Who you vote for and why you vote for them is important as well. 70% tax structure. Creating hostility between the president when you agreed you were going to Congress for a bipartisan approach. And then suggesting that we should take away one of the most important elements of our foundational Constitution, constitutional republic, is not legislating with responsibility. And it'll be interesting to see how the rest of this plays out. As I said, this Congress and the makeup of this Congress and how this Congress responds is identical to the Congress that brought me back to radio. I actually feel comfortable in this element when people come forward and say one thing and then legislate differently. Republicans are capable of it. Democrats are capable of it. And that's not what most of us who are independent-minded voted for or wanted. And we certainly didn't get it. That's been this week's show. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget you can reach out to me at nhperspective@gmail.com. You can check me out at jeffchittister.com, jeffchittister.com. And have a great week and L-F-O-D.
This has been New Hampshire Today, Weekend Edition with Jeff Chittister on News Radio 610 at 96.7. We'll be back next week. And don't forget to tune in to New Hampshire Today with Jack Heath, Monday morning from 6 to 9 on News Radio 610 at 96.7, New Hampshire's news, traffic, and weather station. Out here in the-